ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Next personality of reading this morning, this evening, feels like morning, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Texts 32-34. It's a conversation between Vidura and Uddhava. Vidura is speaking to Uddhava, asking about the welfare of the members of the Yadu dynasty. This morning we spoke about Yuyudhana. What's another name for Yuyudhana? Satyaki. And his achieving spiritual perfection through the medium of devotional service. He learned the art of archery from Arjuna, and he used it in full Krishna consciousness, and he attained the transcendental destination, which is very difficult to reach even for great renouncers. And next on Vidura's list is Akrura. Akrura is said to be the son of Shvapalka. I'll give a little description of the relationship of Shvapalka to the other personalities of Vedic times. Shvapalka was the son of Rishni. We often hear on the Rishni and the Bhoja dynasties or the Andhaka dynasties. So Shvapalka was the son of Rishni, and he had a brother named Chitrarata. So from the time that Shvapalka was born, when they did his horoscope, it was told that wherever Shvapalka is, there'll be no shortage of rainfall and no disease. So during his adult life, and then that prediction came to be so. So during his lifetime, the king of Kashi had this experience. The way it's described in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam is that the arrangement of Indra was that there was no rain in Kashi for 3 years. It was a very serious situation. So they consulted the brahmanas, the king consulted his ministers, and the ministers said, bring Shvapalka here. So he brought Shvapalka, and immediately plentiful rains came. So he was considered this mystical guy. And to reciprocate with that service that Shvapalka had rendered just coming to Kashi, the king of Kashi offered his daughter in marriage. Gandhini became the wife of Shvapalka, and Gandhini and Shvapalka had 13 sons. You've got one. 13 sons. But they were all great souls. Not to say that you're not a great soul. But. And the eldest of them was Akrura. So it was felt... Now what do we know about Akrura? We'll just ask you, what do you know about... When you hear Akrura's name, what do you think of? First and foremost, what do you think of Akrura? We'll just ask everybody to say something about Akrura. You get to go first. Akrura means one who is not cruel. And? Was he not cruel? The gopis said, whoever named this person Akrura really made a mistake. He's most cruel. And what else did the gopis say? We curse him. Did you know that? They cursed Akrura. That just as we have had to undergo so much suffering from separation from Krishna, you will have to do that also. Karma. You made us suffer separation from Krishna, you'll have to experience separation from Krishna. And it came to pass. Let's see if it comes out in the course of this description. What else, when you think of Akrura, what do you think of?
A messenger from Krishna.
Say it again?
He was a messenger from Krishna.
He was a messenger from Krishna. Describe. For Krishna. For Krishna or from Krishna?
He brought the news of Krishna to the gopis.
That's Uddhava. Akrura. I'll help you. There are 9 processes of devotional service. Akrura represents perfection in one of those 9 processes of devotional service, which is? Anyone? Vandanam. What was the circumstance in which he offered prayers to Krishna? Oh, yes, you know. Can you hear him?
Akrura had come to take Krishna and Balaram to Mathura.
Yeah. Footprints.
Yes.
But Vandanam, he didn't just see footprints. I'll help you. Akrura was a member of the royal family, Vrishni dynasty, and Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena, was similarly of the same dynasty. When Kamsa revolted against his father, put his father in jail, he was such a mean person. Many of the members of the Yadu dynasty, Rishni and Andaka dynasty, they left. A few remained, but to remain means you stayed in the service of Kamsa. Akrura stayed in the service of Kamsa. So although he was a Kshatriya, he was a certain type of Kshatriya. It was like Vasudev. Vasudev was a Kshatriya, but he was a certain type of Kshatriya. He was very wise, so he served as a minister. And Akrura served as a minister. So when it came time, Narada visited Kamsa and told Kamsa. You know, remember that 8th son of Devaki? He's there. And I was just visiting the demigods, and they told me that there's a big trouble. You better protect your backside, Kamsa. You're very smart. I don't need to give you any advice. Just protect your backside. See you later, Kamsa. So Kamsa immediately made his plan. He called for Akura, because Akura was elderly and was considered the wisest amongst his ministers. So we're speaking about Akura. So Akura was flattered and flattered and flattered, because that's a way of materialistic people. You want something, you flatter the person. So he flattered him. You're the best. Akuraji, you're the best. I have a very important mission for you. Because of your intimate connection with the Yadu dynasty, I'm sure that you can do it. I'd like you to bring Krishna here. He's over there in my kingdom, in area of Vrindavan, because Kamsa was in Mathura, so Vrindavan is in the area of Mathura. Bring him here, I have a big festival planned, and at that big festival I plan to kill him. He told them everything. And in case there's some difficulty, I have backup plan B, C, and D. I have an idea to kill him other than personally killing him. So, Akura, I have a brand new chariot. It's never been used. Our acharyas comment. They were thinking that he would be impressed. He was like, he had a golden Cadillac or a Rolls Royce. Never been used. Just for you, Akuraji. Finest horses and all gold. Waiting for you. Go get Krishna. Akura was not at all moved by that appeal. In fact, he told Kamsa, I'm your minister. I'll give you some advice. You're inviting death. But you're the king. I'm happy to do what you request. I'll certainly go, and I'm quite confident I'll be successful in bringing Krishna. In fact, it's described, the reason many people left Kamsa's service was that besides he was so nasty, out of fear of life, you associate with this person and you can anger him in a moment and you're finished. But Akura remained because he knew that Krishna would soon appear. He was a great devotee and he wanted to see Krishna, so he stayed. And Krishna fulfilled his desire and he got a chance to go see Krishna. So, the next morning, he got on the chariot and was heading to Vrindavan. Now, those of you that know your geography, how far is Mathura from Vrindavan? By chariot. Not by car. By walking, by chariot. With a good road and those horse-drawn carts that from the Mathura train station, I took one once just in remembrance of Akura's entrance into Vrindavan. It took about an hour plus, but for Akura it took all day long, because he was so much absorbed in thought of Krishna he didn't even know where he was. He was going this way, he was then going that way, and he didn't even know where he was going. But he's a great minister. He's not like a slow person. He was just absorbed in thought of Krishna. And as he was going, absorbed in thought of Krishna, he was offering prayers. He was meditating on what that experience will be like when he sees Krishna. The anticipation of meeting Krishna. He hadn't met him, but he had heard of him. It's like us, we haven't met Krishna, but we've heard of Krishna. And we have our japa every day where we can meet Krishna. We don't have such strong anticipation. Something else is going on. It's like, you know, I have some of my work to do. Very important, I have my work to do. But I have to finish my chanting, so. Akura wasn't like that. Akura was eager to meet Krishna. So he was composing in his mind what that experience would be like when he would see the beautiful face of Krishna, small form of a young cowherd boy, because that time he was 12 years old. What his features would be, his garland and his ornaments and his cloth, and Balaram and his smile and his eyes, and his darkish rain cloud complexion, carrying his flute with all the cowherd boys and Balaram, and just, he was picturing Vrindavan and composing in his mind prayers that he would say to Krishna when he met Krishna. He was just riding in the chariot. His mind was completely absorbed in Krishna. Finally he reached Vrindavan. It was toward the end of the day. It took him all day long to get there. And it was near the time for milking the cows. So he looked to the side of the chariot and he saw the footprints of Krishna in the soft sand of Vrindavan. And that was, according to the language of Rupa Goswami, it was an udipan from Nectar of Devotion. Udipan means a stimulation for ecstatic love for Krishna. There's the science of rasa, where there's a principal emotion, a sthayi bhav, as compared to an axle. So, cart that has an axle, and then there's wheels, and then there's something that stimulates or moves the wheels. Udipans are the qualities of Krishna, or the name of Krishna, or the form of Krishna, or the paraphernalia of Krishna, or the footprints of Krishna. He saw the footprints of Krishna because he's absorbed. His sthayi bhava was activated. Then, seeing the footprints of Krishna, his ecstatic love for Krishna was stimulated, was spun so intensely, he fell out of the chariot. He fell as if embracing the feet of Krishna, although it was just the dust of Vrindavan and Krishna's footprint. He fell unconscious on the ground. Big minister lost it. Fell unconscious on the ground. And that's what the verse says. Please tell me whether Akrur, the son of Shvapalka, is doing well. He is a faultless soul, surrendered under the personality of Godhead. He once lost his mental equilibrium due to his ecstasy of transcendental love, and fell down on the dust of the road, which was marked with the footprints of the Lord. When Krishna, because he saw Krishna, wasn't just thinking of Krishna, he saw Krishna. So he looked up and he saw Krishna, and Krishna came smiling, running over, because Akura is his uncle. There's a detail of how that's not exactly uncle, he's like many generations ahead uncle, but he was his uncle. So Akura, Krishna wanted to pay his respects to his uncle, and Akura wanted to fall at Krishna's feet. So they had this nice discussion. Krishna brought Akura into his home. To see Nanda Maharaj, he spent the night. That evening, Akura was doing his ministerial best to persuade Nanda Maharaj to allow Krishna to come to Mathura. Kamsa has a big festival planned, a bow festival, and he wants Krishna to come. I've come for Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj was thinking, that would be very nice, Krishna will get to go to Mathura. Mother Jasoda wasn't thinking that was very nice. But she didn't want to contradict her husband, because she couldn't bear separation from Krishna. It wasn't like anything other than that. But because she was so faithful to her husband, she kept her contrary feelings to herself. Later, the elder gopis really let Jasoda have it for not speaking up. You should have prevented your husband from sending Krishna. Now just see, we're without Krishna. So then occurred, first thing in the morning, left on his golden chariot. And you know the scene, this horrible scene. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's a whole chapter dedicated to describing that scene. And it's Narada describing it. Narada describes, he begins the description by saying, this is the most horrible thing for the residents of Vrindavan. There is nothing that matches, even comes close to being as horrible as this, and so most people don't even want to talk about it. But then he ends up spending a whole chapter talking about it because it's in relation to Krishna. It's a stimulation of ecstatic love. Just remembering the pastimes of Krishna. Even one may not have experienced them. Narada wasn't there, but Narada, in describing the pastime, entered into himself, entered into a state of absorption, of trance, just like it happened to occur, describing, or the residents of Vrindavan, describing that horrible situation, Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. So Kura was the instrument of Kamsa for leaving Vrindavan. Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. Prabhupada writes, when Akura came to Vrindavan to search for Krishna, in search of Krishna, he saw the footprints of the Lord in the dust of Nandaram, and at once fell on them in ecstasy and transcendental love. This ecstasy is possible for a devotee who is fully absorbed in incessant thought of Krishna. You can't be in incessant thought of something by derived mechanical means. A materialist does have incessant thought of sense gratification, or say a businessman. It's money. Money, 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 money. Money, 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 money. 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 They can't think of anything else. Or an alcoholic. It's their alcohol. Or narcotic. It's that they're addicted. Or a sex fiend, or you know, someone who that they're fixated on something. But it's a very unhealthy disease like that. But it's all on the, in a broad sense, even if one doesn't have a particular addiction, it's a broader sense gratification. Whatever thought one has is in relation to sense gratification. How can I enhance my enjoyment of sense gratification? And everything is in terms of sense gratification. And like Prabhupada's explanation is, this material world is the opposite of a place of sense gratification. It's a place of suffering. gave the example of fans. He was in Vrindavan saying, just like this fan. Most people think, ah, very nice. But actually what it is, it's a demonstration that we're suffering because we need a fan. Fan isn't happiness, it's just they're losing the track of the fact that we're suffering. And any situation, you know, advancement is you reduce that suffering. But it's just in terms of sense gratification. This type or that type of sense gratification. Some like it this way, some like it that way. When I was traveling in America recently, there was a flight that went from Minneapolis to Houston. And Minneapolis is way in the north part of the U.S. and it's cold. Winters are very, very cold. It's almost into Canada. And Houston is south. It's, you know, near the Gulf area, Gulf of Mexico, so it's very warm. We were waiting for our bags, and a man was very, one of these boisterous guys, saying, I like it when it's zero, sub-zero is best. If it could be sub-zero every day, and here we are in Texas, you know, it's like hot. He was going on and on about how he likes it. He's a polar bear. He likes it cold. So some like it hot, some like it cold. When I was a child, we had this little nursery rhyme. Some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot 3 days old. Speaking of food, you know, some like mode of goodness, some like the mode of passion, some like the mode of ignorance. And according to the modes of nature, we're drawn to something and repelled by another something. But somebody of another mode of nature is drawn by, you know, the opposite. They're repelled by the same something you're drawn by and they like something else. One man's food is another man's poison. It's just the modes of nature. So being absorbed in thought of something according to the modes of nature, it's not going to endure because after some time the modes of nature will change and that which is the object that attracts one, you know, the fixation of boy upon girl or girl upon boy, romance, later turns into catastrophe. As Prabhupada would say, and this is going on. So there's nothing steady, however people may be fixed on money, 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 you know, because after some time, that hope for happiness and getting money dissipates, it explodes, all that hope to get money, and then there's a calamity, and all the money's gone, and that money was is no longer a source of happiness, it's a source of misery, etc. And this is going on. But the absorption of thought upon Krishna is something, the nature of things in the material world is they're static. They're ever changing, but you know, there's no topography, it's all flat. There's no dimension to it. And on the spiritual plane, things are, they're ecstatic, especially when there's a particularly strong stimulation for ecstatic love for Krishna, some thought of Krishna. Like one of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya's name was Mukunda. Mukunda was a royal physician. So one day he went to attend the king. You know this story. He's the royal physician, so he was taking care of medical needs of the king, and he was standing before the king, and it was the the morning sun started to rise and started to shine directly on the king, and so one of his servants came and held a huge peacock fan just to shield the king. And when Mukunda saw the huge peacock fan, his thoughts went to Krishna, and he fell to the ground in a trance of ecstasy and thought of Krishna. The king got off his throne and came down and tried to lift Mukunda and asked him. Finally, he gained external consciousness and asked him, "What happened? Are you okay?" He said, "Oh, I have this disease that's something like epilepsy, and every now and then I have seizures." And the king said, "I don't think so. I think you're a great devotee, and you saw that peacock fan." So from thereafter, not only he retained him as his royal physician, but he treated him with great respect, because there's a stimulation of ecstatic love. Mukunda, the physician, or Pundarik Vidyanidhi. You know that description, Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So, it was the same Mukunda. Mukunda knew of Pundarik Vidyanidhi before he came to town, and his dear friend was Gadadhar Pandit. So he invited Gadadhar Pandit. "There's this wonderful sage that's come to town. I'd like you to come meet him." So he went with his friend. And when he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi and the level of apparent gross sense gratification, you know, or material opulence, display of material opulence that in Gadadhar Pandit, from childhood, was a renouncer. He was, a very ardent, detached little boy. And when he saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi like this, he was wondering, why was I brought here? I don't want anything to do with this person. So knowing the mind of his friend, Mukunda sang. He was very good at singing. And he sang a verse from the Bhagavatam. And hearing the verse from the Bhagavatam, this was a stimulation for ecstatic love. Pundarik lost it. He began, his body went out of control. He began convulsing and fell to the ground. And as he fell, all the paraphernalia, his fine drinks and tables and all opulent paraphernalia went crashing in all directions. Mukunda continued to sing more verses, and he was continuing to sing. Pundarik fell unconscious. Then Gadadhar Pandit could understand, this person isn't a sense gratifier at all. He's a great devotee of Krishna. And I've made a big offense. In my mind, I was criticizing this person. So I want to rectify that big offense. So he asked Pundarik Vidyanidhi for forgiveness for thinking of him improperly, and asked if he could become his disciple. So Gadadhar Pandit, the super renouncer, became Pundarik Vidyanidhi's disciple. In Rupa Goswami's description of bhava bhakti, and then in turn prema bhakti, well, actually it's in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's. Bhava bhakti is where there's some stimulation and a sudden spike, a peak of emotion that erupts. It's not, you can't try to get bhava. It's when there's purity and there's stimulation of something in relation to Krishna, an eruption of ecstatic emotion spontaneously comes. And then there's these series of spikes of ecstasy. There's a particular sthayi bhava, a particular mood or type of relationship with Krishna. which then becomes stimulated. So Krishna's pastimes, or Krishna's form, or anything in relation to Krishna serves, just like they did the descriptions of the form of Krishna. There's many places where that appears. When one is fixed in thought of Krishna and hears those, though each of those are, you know, you can see on the screen, boop, little ecstasy blips arise. And prema is where it's not, you know, a blip on the screen, but this eruption of so many different ecstasies, and as those ecstasies mix, that's what prema is. That's what prema bhakti is. It's not just happiness. It's not just, like we were reading this morning, a relief from banging your head against the wall. It's not a detachment from the material attractions, but it's the positive, not only spiritual attraction, but ecstasy, constant ecstasy. Love of God, and that's what is being described in the purport here. This ecstasy is possible for a devotee who is fully absorbed in incessant thoughts of Krishna. Such a pure devotee of the Lord is naturally faultless because he always associated with the supreme pure personality of Godhead. Constant thought of the Lord. There's this question about purity this morning. Here's a nice answer. Becoming sinless. Constant thought of the Lord is the antiseptic method for keeping oneself free from the infectious contaminations of the material qualities, meaning modes of nature. The pure devotee of the Lord is always in company with the Lord by thinking of Him. Listen to this sentence, it's curious. Yet, constant thinking of the Lord, that's like the foundation upon which something else is going to be built. Yet, in the particular context of time and place, the transcendental emotions take a different turn, and this breaks the mental equilibrium of the devotee. The Lord displayed the typical example, Lord Chaitanya displayed the typical example of transcendental ecstasy, as we can understand from the life of this incarnation of God. So, that is to say, there's this steady remembrance, and then something, like Lord Chaitanya just walking through Puri, and seeing a sand dune. You know, he's walking along the beach and he sees a sand dune. When he sees the sand dune, he doesn't just see a sand dune. He sees Govardhan Hill. He's reminded of Govardhan Hill. And then he sees Govardhan Hill. And then he sees Krishna on Govardhan Hill. Because his thought is steadily upon Krishna, although he's walking along the beach. And as he sees Krishna, he starts running to Krishna with his arms outstretched to embrace Krishna. And as, like Akura, as he's approaching Krishna, he becomes so absorbed in anticipation of meeting with Krishna, he fell to the ground unconscious. So it's the steady, and then Prabhupada's language here is, in the particular context of time and place, the transcendental emotions take a different turn, and this breaks the mental equilibrium of the devotee, which is what's being said about Akura. In the verse, he lost his mental equilibrium due to his ecstasy of transcendental love and fell down on the dust of the road, which was marked with the footprints of Lord Krishna. he was rolling, Kura was rolling around in the ground. Big minister, rolling around on the ground to take the dust on his body where Krishna walked. All, you know, pomp and dignity was abandoned. And he was in spontaneous ecstatic love. So one other thing that's mentioned, I didn't cover the verses that I thought it would cover, sorry about that, but it says he's a faultless soul, surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anamivaha kachit buddhya svasti anamiva aste. Anamiva is faultless. Well, let me ask you, O great scholars of the Vedas, Akura is here being said as being faultless. Akura is being said to have achieved spiritual perfection through prayer unto Krishna. Perfection, not just he prayed, he was a nice person, he prayed to God. He achieved spiritual perfection. It's ecstasy and love of God. He was selected by Krishna to Balaram. There's another, I'll come back to my question. Balaram at one time was, it was after Dronacharya had finished his training of the boys, the royal family, so both the Pandavas and the Kauravas, but then it was just, you know, the royal family. He trained all those boys in the military skills that he had learned from Parashuram. And then after that came his Guru Dakshin. And what was his Guru Dakshin? He wanted the boys, his students, to bring Drupad before him, bound up in ropes like a common prisoner. That was the dakshin. So off they went to go make battle with Drupad. But Drupad wasn't small, you know, weak guy. The Kauravas went first. The Pandavas said, you're capable, you can do it. Right, Mahabharata? And the Drupad, very powerful warrior, drove them away with his army. So he came back defeated. So the five brothers said, we'll take our turn, and they went and they defeated. But especially was Arjun, and with his archery ability, and they brought Drupad before Drona, bound up, just like Bali Maharaj was, you know, with ropes all around him, bound up, prisoner. So what did Drona say? My dear Drupad, you're my dear friend. We went to school together. We were the best of friends. But you broke your promise, and kings don't break any promise. You broke your promise. Your promise was that you would give me half of your kingdom when we grew up. But you not only didn't give me half of your kingdom, you threw me out of your kingdom. So now that you've been defeated, your kingdom is mine. But I'll tell you what, I'll give you back half your kingdom. So that your word as a kshatriya is now protected. It's for your sake. Here's half your kingdom back. So Drupad accepted. Externally, but internally it was, I want to get back at Drona. So he had his plan. After that, Balaram was in Hastinapur, and he was training the royal family in fighting with a club, because that's part of their training. And particularly his two best students were you-know-who and you-know-who. Bhima and Duryodhana. When Balaram was present during that time, he could understand this situation is very intense. The rivalry between Dhritarashtra's sons and Pandu's sons is very strong. So when Balaram went back to Dwaraka, he reported that to Krishna. We got a problem over there in Hastinapur. So Krishna called for his chief minister. And who was his chief minister besides Uddhava? Akura. Akuraji, you're very expert. Flattering, like Kamsa. But it wasn't flattering, it was genuine appreciation. I have a very important mission for you. I want you to go to Hastinapur and do your, you know, intelligence program, do your spy program. I want you to give me a detailed report just what the situation is. So Kuro went to Hastinapur. Many nice things happened. And he went back. So he was very much appreciated by Krishna as his qualification of being an excellent minister. He had achieved spiritual perfection by constant prayer unto Krishna. He was the son of Shapalka, who was this mystically powerful person where no disease and no drought. And especially in agrarian society, that's especially important. You have sufficient rainfall. That's the economy. That's, you know, there he is, Mr. Economic Development in person. Although he had this, all these wonderful qualities, still he was engaged in a murder plot. You aware of that? When Akura was in Dwaraka, he was part of a murder conspiracy of Krishna's father-in-law, Satrajit, in relation to the Shamantaka jewel. Kritavarma and Akura both were so angry. Devotees aren't supposed to get so angry. They were so angry at Akura, they told a messenger, go get the Shamantaka jewel from Chitrajit, steal it. And if you take his life, that's good too. And so he did. He stole the Shamantaka jewel and killed Chitrajit. At that time, Chitrajit was Krishna's father-in-law, because Satrajit gave his daughter in marriage, Satyabhama, along with the Shamantaka jewel. So to Satrajit, to Krishna. Krishna gave back the jewel and said, I'll take your jewel-like daughter. That's fine. Because he didn't give the jewel willingly. He did it because, you know, he didn't want it to be at odds with the Yadu dynasty, but the Yadu dynasty was still angry at him for accusing Krishna of murder and theft. It's very interesting. Even Krishna is accused of wrong things. So when we get accused of wrong things, just think of Krishna. So how was it that a cur was involved in a murder plot? At the time when this happened, Krishna wasn't in Dwarka. Krishna had gone to Hastinapur to attend the funeral of the Pandavas, because by this time the House of Lack incident took place. You know, that tension that Balaram saw and that Akura saw had boiled or had become more intense up to the point of the House of Lack plan of murdering them, and the bodies, the bones of a woman and five men were found in the burned house. So they thought Krishna and Balaram, Kunti and the Pandavas were dead. Krishna's omniscient, he knew different. But he went to the funeral. And Balaram went also. So the incident of the killing of Satrajit took place while Krishna was away. When Satyabhama was informed that her father had been killed, she did two things. She's part of, you know, the royal family, so she knew her order was followed. She ordered that the body of her father be placed in oil, preserved, so that she could bring Krishna and Balaram back and he can perform the funeral ceremony for her father. And she wanted to inform Krishna what happened. So she went to Hastinapur and brought Krishna back. And when she brought Krishna back, the funeral was performed and Krishna was evaluating how has this happened? Who killed Satrajit? So curiously, Kritavarma and Akura, when they heard Krishna's returning, Kritavarma left Dwarka on a fast horse and he left behind this Shamataka jewel. But he wasn't interested in the Shamataka jewel. He was interested in, now he's interested in saving his life. But he was then protecting the reputation of Krishna. Or not protecting, but you know, getting back at the person who had tried to harm Krishna's reputation by accusing him of murder. So Kritavarma left, Krishna and Balaram pursued him, they captured him, Krishna killed him, found that he didn't have the Shamataka jewel, so Krishna went back. And Balaram stayed to visit another king that they had not seen for some time. And when Krishna returned, Akura left. So when Akura left, this is described in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, or in Krishna book. When Akura left, something very strange happened. In Dwarka, there was a drought. And diseases were spreading in Dwarka. So everyone was talking, you know, It's because Akura left. He's the son of Shopalka. He's mystically empowered like Shopalka. Because we never had this problem before, but now Akura's gone. So it must be because Akura's gone. And Akura must have left because of some reason in relation to Krishna, so they started blaming Krishna again. Even if you're Krishna, you can be accused wrongly. So if you're accused wrongly, think of Krishna. So Krishna heard that Akura had gone to Kashi, the place where his father had been married for some time. He may even have been born in Kashi. He went back to Kashi with the Shamataka jewel, and it became known that Akura became fabulously wealthy. He had a golden throne because the Shamataka jewel, each day when worshipped, generated some number of pounds of gold, something like 70 pounds of gold every day. That's a lot of gold. So Krishna called for Akura. That was the curse that the Acharyas described, that the reason why Akura did what he did was to fulfill the curse of the gopis, that you will have to suffer like I did, like we are suffering. Separation from Krishna. See, although he was an intimate devotee of Krishna, he had to leave Dwarka, be in separation from Krishna. Krishna brought him back, said, Akura, my dear uncle. This is speaking to the murderer of his father-in-law. Akura, I hear you have all this gold. Where'd you get all this gold, Akura? Do you have the Shamantaka jewel? Can I see it? Do you happen to have it with you? So Akura could understand that Krishna knew everything. The murder, the Shamantaka jewel, everything. So he just wept and cried and offered the jewel to Krishna. Please forgive me for my horrible activities. Krishna said, I don't want the jewel. I just want to show it to the residents of Dwarka so they know the reason the drought and the diseases have come is the absence of the Shamantaka jewel. But now you stay here in Dwarka and you worship Shamantaka jewel. You keep the jewel. Be happy. Stay here. In Krishna's, how can there be drought in Krishna's presence? Diseases in Krishna's presence. Who cares about Akura and a Shamataka jewel? It's Krishna, the source of everything. It was a lila. It's Krishna's enactment of a very mysterious drama that even one who is on the platform of Akura, it's like one who is on the platform of Bhishma Dev. If you do not protect women, you can be destroyed. All your virtue can be taken away. Even you're on the platform of Grandfather Bhishma. Or even you may be on the platform of Akura. All these wonderful things that, you know. As the verse says, he is a faultless soul, surrendered unto the personality of Godhead. Anamivaha. Faultless. If you get the gopis angry at you, you've got a problem. Don't offend pure devotee. He had done nothing wrong. In one sense, he was just fulfilling a wish of Krishna to go from Vrindavan to Mathura. And Akura was the instrument of that. But when you're doing some good service for Krishna, be very careful about offending the devotees in the course of doing that good service, because it can cause a problem in your devotional service. Inadvertent mistakes will always be there because we're in this material world and it's an imperfect place, but we should always be very careful in the course of our devotional service to not offend the Vaishnavas. And particularly, don't offend the gopis, whatever you do. A big problem. But don't offend any devotee. Be careful. Okay, I didn't get very far, but we heard something about Akura, the son of Shopalka, who was faultless, surrendered completely unto the personality of Godhead, and particularly he's being remembered here by his swoon of love of God, in which he fell to the ground, rolling in the dust, like a madman, when he saw the footprints of Krishna on the road, and over on the side he was off in the pasture with the cows. He hadn't even seen Krishna. He just saw the footprints. Lost his mental equilibrium. An eruption of ecstatic love of God. How is he doing? How is Uncle Akura? Vidura's question. I'm sorry it's so late. Any comments or questions? How does a devotee remain simple-minded even when there's some opulence? My thought immediately goes to Ambarish Maharaj. The description of his wealth was, there was no limit to his wealth. It surpassed the opulence of heaven. But he was, because of attachment to Krishna, he didn't care for it at all. He used it expertly in Krishna's service. But he wasn't attached. So pride is a fruit of false ego. I and mine. Aham and mama. The conception of I is the foundation for the conception of mind. Pride falls in that area of mind, something that's mine, my wisdom, my wealth, my opulence. Pride is checked when there isn't false ego. False ego is the spiritual conception of who you are. And if the spiritual conception is, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, then this opulence is for service to Krishna. It's being, by mercy of Krishna, being provided so that I can serve him in a particular capacity. Undeviating should be the mood of service. The conception of oneself as a very, very tiny servant. But constitutionally, that tiny service that's our real opulence. That's our real identity, and it's our real net worth. Being Krishna's servant. And you depart from that mood, and pride is sure to be there. So that's where our protection comes. Mood of humble service. And it's not, it can't be cosmetic. It has to be very deep and genuine. It has to be our understanding of who we are. Not just a quality I put on and take off, like a set of clothes. It's who we are. And when that shelter is there, there's protection from pride. It takes a genuine spiritual conception. Otherwise, it's not enduring. It's asat. Humility is a quality of the soul. It's a quality of a Vaishnava, but the essence quality of a Vaishnava is Krishna ekasharanam. And when that's there, humility and pridelessness are there. You read in the purport of Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text 8 through 12. And there's a list of items of knowledge. And in the first paragraph, of all the qualities of knowledge or features of knowledge, mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyavicharini is the foremost. Avyavichari bhakti, unalloyed devotion. And that is made possible by the mercy of the spiritual master. Acharya upasana. So from this, which is made possible by this, then amanitvam adambitvam. Humility and pridelessness. So when there's pridelessness, one of the tests or symptoms of pridelessness is if that thing is taken away, that wealth, that wisdom, that opulence, if it's taken away, one is undisturbed. If you have some facility for serving Krishna, that's very nice, but supposing that facility is taken away, like at the time of death, everything is taken away. One of our ISKCON gurus within the past 24 hours left his body. His name is Mahavishnu Goswami, 91-year-old Gujarati Vaishnav. And there were several qualities that he had that were very nice. He loved Srimad Bhagavatam. He could read or speak about Bhagavatam so nicely, and he is a very jolly person. When he would speak something, he would often speak with humor, and when he would speak with humor, he would laugh, and when he would laugh, his whole body would laugh. And when he was laughing, his whole body was laughing. Everyone was in this lighthearted, but then he would present, you know, these pearls of wisdom that were just very insightful. It was a very wonderful Vaishnava. So he just left his body. When he left his body, all of his opulences left with him, except the core opulence, which was he was totally absorbed in Krishna. So his up to the very last part of his life, he was laughing and, you know, in a jolly mood, speaking about Krishna. Speaking about, you know, the futility of this material body. And soon it'll just be gone, and I'll just be with thought of Krishna. You know, when you leave the body, it's painful. It means that the body is so, in such a decrepit state, it's just, it's unfit for habitation anymore. It's painful. He just transcended that pain. And was absorbed in thought of Krishna, left his body. Surrounded with devotees in kirtan. I mean, it was a very auspicious departure. So a test of pridelessness is when that thing is gone. Or is one still happy? Because if Krishna wants me to have it to serve him, fine. If Krishna wants to take it away, fine. But, you know, Krishna can't take away will not take away my constitutional position of service unto him. Some way I'll serve Krishna. Something else? Yes? Gradually. The stage of ecstatic prior to bhava bhakti is sadhana bhakti. So do your sadhana bhakti very nicely. And gradually purification will come. And as gradual purification comes, just as mentioned, the material conceptions of even what devotional service is will become spiritual conceptions of what devotional service is and what's the purpose to be fulfilled. Now we have a mix, some material, some spiritual. So they become spiritualized through gradual sadhana bhakti to the stage where some attraction, now we have attraction for objects of the senses and we're controlling it. Through purification, gradually some attraction comes for devotional service and the object of devotional service. There's stages of bhakti. So I could detail the stages because that you're asking what are some of the practical steps. But for now, rather than just like lay out the map of getting to the treasure chest or the fruit of love of God, the main focus at this stage is upon the practices of bhakti and the purpose behind those practices of bhakti. It's always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna and be clear on the purpose to absorb ourselves in thought of Krishna in every circumstance of life, not just, you know, the sadhana portions, morning and evening devotional practices, then remember Krishna the rest of the day. It's something else. It's constant remembrance of Krishna, the purpose, and to regulate our life so that that becomes facilitated. Say it the other way around. Do all the things that you do in such a way it will enhance your chanting of Krishna's holy name. Say it the other way around. Chant the holy name in such a way that your whole life is filled with thought of Krishna. One enhances the other. The goal is absorption. So we practice, we're not absorbed right now. We're practicing. Practice in such a way that goal is in mind. And I do my chanting and hearing, particularly those Shravanam Kirtanam activities, with the view in mind, this is for absorption in Krishna and thought of Krishna. Constant. And service that we do all the rest of the day is just an expression of that attachment for Krishna or remaining connected with Krishna by serving Him. Anything else? Thank you.